My name is Melissa. I'm one of the pastors here at 10th Church, if I haven't had a chance to meet you. And today I have the privilege of bringing the message. The Humble Cabbage Patch Doll was the most popular toy for girls in the early 1980s, and of course I had one. My Cabbage Patch Doll looked like this, and her name was Maribel Mabel. Maribel came with me everywhere. I smuggled her in my backpack and brought her to school. I brought her on holidays. Even as a child, during periods where I was hospitalized for asthma, Maribel came with me to the hospital to spend the night. I also brought Maribel into my adulthood. When I was 21 and I moved out, Maribel came with me. When I got married, much to my husband Jay's ridicule, Maribel also came with me. Every time Jay and I moved, even across Providence, Maribel came. You see, I had this hope that one day I would have a child and I would be able to pass Maribel on. So Jay and I would eventually have a child. We would have a daughter. And we had just moved, and I was unpacking boxes, and I came across Maribel. And I turned to Jay and I said rather smugly, "Jay, aren't you glad I kept her? Because now I can give her to Ada." So I put Maribel behind me and I continued packing for a while until I heard a commotion behind me. So I turned around, and the first thing I saw was my dog. My dog was cowering in the corner, and she had bits of flesh-colored plastic around her face. And then I turned to Jay, and Jay was laughing, and he had that kind of silent laugh where tears are coming down his eyes. And I look in his hands, and he's holding Maribel. Maribel with her face chewed off. Yes. I also started to cry. But my tears weren't tears of laughter. They were bitter tears. I was angry at my stupid dog. I was upset with my husband for laughing so hard. But mostly I was upset because this piece of my childhood was gone. I couldn't pass her on. Loss is hard. Loss can feel a little bit like death. Whether it's the death of a childhood ideal, the death of a dream as we get older and we realize life is not the way I thought it was going to be. The death of a relationship, a job, financial security, the idea that we might own a home in Vancouver. Or the ultimate death, the death of a loved one. The feelings through death are universal. Sorrow, pain, deep grief. We are getting close to the end of our sermon series, Jesus Breaking Through, where we've been looking at the book of John and how Jesus in the book of John shows us who God is, and specifically how God breaks through. In our story today, God or Jesus is going to break into one of the most tragic, sorrowful times in our life. Jesus breaks through death. Our story is in John chapter 11. It's fairly long, so I've chosen some selected verses from it. Feel free to follow along with me on the screen. John chapter 11. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea. Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so you may believe. But let us go to him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied, "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, If you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." This is the word of the Lord. Please pray with me. Lord, we thank you for giving us Jesus, who breaks through into our world. Would you continue breaking through today as we talk about death? Would you meet us in our sorrow, in our grieving? Give us hope today, Lord. Amen. So our story today is about grieving, sorrow, pain. It's about death. It's going to be a different kind of sermon than I've preached before, but bear with me because this sermon is also about life. It may seem unfathomable, especially in the midst of our deep sorrow, but Jesus shows us that the only way to get through to the other side of death is to go through. Whether it's physical death, the death of a job, a relationship, a dream, the only way through is through. But we don't go through alone. Jesus shows us that as we go through the painful process of death, Jesus is with us. And he breaks through in 3 ways. First, Jesus waits. Then Jesus weeps. But finally, Jesus wins. Jesus waits. Jesus weeps. Jesus wins. Waiting is hard. I grew up in a hockey family. Most people in my family played hockey. I did not, but I watched hockey. We all watched hockey, and really we watched hockey because my dad made us. My dad is a hockey fanatic, but not just for all hockey. He's actually a fanatic for one team, the Vancouver Canucks. My dad, you know where this is going. My dad has been a fan since 1970, when the Canucks joined the NHL. That's just about 50 years. 50 years of watching the Canucks, and 50 years of waiting. And he continues to wait. Waiting is hard, but unlike waiting for the Canucks, sometimes waiting has a purpose. So, and I'm just going to say this because some of you probably know this. The sermons are recorded to be online, and so my dad's going to listen. So I just want to say, Dad, I'm sorry for trashing the Canucks right now. In our story today, waiting does have a purpose. Jesus is with his disciples when he gets word that his beloved friend Lazarus is ill. But instead of going straight to Lazarus, Jesus waits. Why does he do this? Why does he wait? We read that Jesus waits after he finds out for 2 days. But he says this, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." So that you may believe. This word "so" shows us that waiting was a calculated move on Jesus' part. I did this action, so this other thing can happen. It's important to the story, so we're just going to investigate it for a moment. Jesus gives us a bit of a clue in that very passage. He says, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe." And later on in a parallel passage, Jesus says to Martha, Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? Jesus waits so that people will believe, so that people would see the glory of God. He times his arrival perfectly because he needs people to know that Lazarus really is dead. We're told in the story that when he gets there, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. In the ancient world, there was this belief that the soul hovered around the body for about 3 days, but after that, it was gone. Death at that point was irreversible. Jesus wanted the witnesses to know that he wasn't just healing somebody who had been in a coma or was in a deep sleep, but rather that he was reversing death. And he did this because he wanted to give everybody the best chance of believing that he was the Messiah, and that because their belief would result in them seeing the glory of God. But that's going to come later on. In the moment of their grief and sorrow, and in the moments of our grief and sorrow, the fact that God's timing is different than our timing doesn't actually provide a lot of comfort. So we question Jesus. And this is okay. When Jesus finally arrives at Bethany, his friends Mary and Martha show their lack of understanding in his plan when they say this: "If only you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. If only you had been here." Our lives are riddled with if-onlys. You might be sitting here right now and you're thinking about an if-only in your life. If only, Jesus, you had been here, my brother, my mother, my father, my sister, my friend, my child wouldn't have died. If only, Jesus, you hadn't intervened a long time ago, my marriage might not be broken. Jesus, if only you hadn't been there when I was a kid and given me better parents, I wouldn't be so messed up. Jesus, if only you hadn't been there 10 years ago and given me a down payment, I wouldn't be struggling to find a place to rent. There's this common falsehood in our faith: don't question Jesus. Don't question the will of God, because he might turn his face from you, or he might be angry. But our story shows that this is completely untrue. Mary and Martha say to Jesus, "If only you had been here." And Jesus doesn't get angry with them. He doesn't chastise them for their lack of faith. He does something else. Mary and the crowd that follow her are weeping. And Jesus sees this. We read that he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Now, the English words don't actually do justice to what really happened. In the original translation, Jesus was indignant. He was agitated. Literally, he snorted with indignation. He had this visceral reaction to seeing their pain. But he's not angry at them. He's upset at something else, and we see this in the next section. Jesus says, "Where have you laid Lazarus?" And they say, "Come and see, Lord. Come and see." Jesus asks to go into the heart of their grief, to the very place where their dead brother has been laid, and they don't dig in their heels out of anger. They don't shut him out. They invite him in. Come and see. When we are in the midst of death, loss, pain, sorrow, suffering, Jesus is asking us, "Will you show it to me? Will you let me in?" And his hope is that we would be like Martha and Mary, and we would say, "Come and see. Come and see how my relationship is ending after years that I would pray that you would make it better. Come and see the grief and anger that I have over my lost, dead dreams, my dream that I would have a spouse by now, or that I would have a house, or that I would have my career. Come and see me as I am taken over my pain and sorrow over the death of a friend. Come and see me at my worst. Come and witness my pain, Jesus. Even come and see the result of your waiting." The shortest verse in the Bible comes after this, and it's Jesus' response. When we invite him to come and see, we are told that Jesus wept. This is our second point. Jesus weeps. And not just weeps, but Jesus sobs. In our story, we are told that Jesus was crying so hard and so deep that the people exclaim, "Look how much he loved Lazarus." This is the glory of God. That God incarnate God in the flesh, Jesus Christ, would enter into the deep sorrow of humanity and that he weeps. When I was a teenager, in the summer between grade 10 and 11, I was bullied. And bullied pretty badly. I've come to believe that I was kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time. Bullies need a victim, and I just happened to be there. Didn't make it easy, though. When grade 11 started, I found myself in the center of a scene that felt like a high school movie instead of my life. I was invited to meet a bunch of people at the front of the school, and as I approached, I saw that all of my friends were there. And I thought, maybe it's over. Maybe we can move on. Maybe they found a new victim. But instead, I was invited into the middle of the circle, and everybody crowded around me. And the boy who I'd had a crush on since junior high began to mock me in front of everybody. He began to shame me. He began to call me names while everybody stood there and laughed. I'm not going to get into what he talked about or what he said, but I wanted to die. This felt like a death, and it was, in many ways, a death. The death of my friendships, the death of my illusion of popularity, the death of my confidence, the death of my innocence, the death of my childhood for good. That evening, I told my parents, and I told them what had not just happened that day, but what had been happening all summer. And I thought my parents would be mad at me. See, when my parents didn't know because they thought I was hanging out with my friends, but all summer I'd be going out for walks by myself because I was embarrassed. I didn't want to let them in. But instead of getting angry at me for not telling them what was going on sooner, my parents wept. They entered into my deep sorrow and they wept with me. The action would come later, us going to the principal, but in that moment, I just needed to be sad. I needed to grieve the losses I was suffering, and my parents also needed to be sad. See, what good parent wants to see their child suffering? This is why Jesus wept, because of his deep love for his friends. But it goes even further than that. Some commentators have suggested, and I tend to believe them, that Jesus wept because he is God, God incarnate. He wept for humanity. When Jesus first meets Martha on the road, he says to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. I am the resurrection. I am the life." It's kind of like Jesus' other statements, "I am the bread of heaven," or "I am the gate." Not, "I bring resurrection and I bring life," but "I am the resurrection. I am the life." The opposite of resurrection and life is death. The text doesn't say so, but it isn't a far leap to suggest that Jesus' tears, his indignation, were aimed at death and everything that death brings, and the enemy, Satan, who uses death to his advantage. Jesus doesn't bring about resurrection and life. He is the resurrection and life, and in this way, he is fully incompatible with death. As the resurrection and the life, Jesus is fully incompatible with death. The human Jesus enters into the sorrow of his friends. The divine Jesus hates death and all that death brings, and he enters into the deep sorrow of humanity. And Jesus weeps. But it doesn't end with weeping. Like my parents who went to the principal's office after the weeping, Jesus first weeps, but then he takes action. Jesus waits, Jesus weeps, but then Jesus wins. So the crowd is watching. Jesus gets to the tomb, and he says, "Take the stone away." And they don't want to take the stone away. Martha says, "Lazarus has been in there for 4 days. It's going to stink." And Jesus says, "Take the stone away anyway." So they do, and he offers up this prayer to heaven, giving thanks that God hears him and reiterating that he's doing this so that people will believe. And then he says, with the same authority as the creation of the world, "Let there be light." Jesus says, "Lazarus, come out." Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus does come out. He's wrapped in his grave clothes. And so Jesus instructs the crowd to remove them so that he can be free. When Jesus says, "I am the resurrection," this is what he's talking about. He has raised Lazarus's body, restored it back to what it was before death ravaged it. This is Jesus breaking through. But Lazarus is going to die again. He's going to get old, he's going to get sick, or he's going to have an accident. He will die. But Jesus has a solution. He says also, "I am the life." And when he says this, he's talking about eternal life. Nobody at the scene understands it yet, but Jesus is going to break through in an even greater act of glory. Have you ever had a friend, or I should really say, have you ever had an enemy who can't stand it when you win? They just can't stand it when you get ahead. In fact, they're so jealous of your success that they try to sabotage you. Jesus resurrects Lazarus, and we're told that many of the witnesses believed that's what he hoped would happen, but some of them don't. And the people who don't go to the chief priests and they tell on Jesus, and the chief priests just can't stand it. Jesus threatens their certainty, their security, their power, and they begin their plan to sabotage Jesus, the ultimate sabotage. They began plotting his death. How ironic that Jesus bringing about new life in Lazarus would result in his own death. Whether you're familiar with the Bible or not, you know what happens soon after. Jesus is put to death. He's put to death on a cross, and something mysterious and glorious happens. He takes upon himself all of the sin, all of the brokenness of all of humanity, and he takes it with him into the grave. And 3 days later, he is risen again. But his resurrected body is different from Lazarus's. When Lazarus is restored, when he's resurrected, he comes out of the grave in his grave clothes. He has been raised again, but death has been reversed in this process. Jesus, when he is resurrected, he is raised again, but he has no grave clothes. He has left the grave clothes behind. Jesus has gone through death. Jesus has raised up on the other side of death with a new body, a new eternal body. And with this, death is defeated. Death does not get the last word. Jesus wins. And we are promised that if we believe in him, we will also see this glory. We will also experience this resurrection in our eternal bodies. I recently had dinner with a friend, and I hadn't seen her in a couple years. And as we were catching up over the last 2 years of our life, she described her last 2 years as years of loss, years of death. She's had a couple of jobs that have ended, and with the end of those jobs have come a loss of income, but also a loss of confidence, a loss of direction. Some friendships and some community have also ended. So she talks about a loss of relationship. She's experiencing the loss of a close friend through death right now. And she's also feels like God has given her a dream for something that she should be doing in her life right now. But as she pursues this dream, the doors keep closing over and over again. So she talks about the death of a dream. As we talk some more, we wondered, could it be that God is working about a new life in my friend by having her wait for some reason? That Jesus is weeping with her in her crying? That maybe some of my friend's dreams actually need to die, so that Jesus can resurrect something better because his dream for her is so much better than she can imagine. Even though we were crying as we were talking about this, my friend showed the depth of her faith when she was able to say, "I know I have to go through these deaths in order to see new life. I hope that that new life is coming soon." I have another friend right now, Jane Tai. And Jane is battling a rare and aggressive form of cancer. Jane has given me permission to talk about her today. In fact, this sermon was read to her and she gave me a hearty thumbs up that it's okay to share. Many of you know Jane because Jane used to be our preschool pastor. Many of your children have come up through Jane's ministry. And she's also mentored many people sitting here today. Now, unless God miraculously heals Jane, she is in her last days, weeks, or months of life. but she is going through one of the most inspiring deaths I have ever seen. The outpouring of love for her is astounding, and her outpouring of love for her friends and family is astounding. A few weeks ago, some of you likely attended Jane's wedding to her now husband Sam at the top of Grouse Mountain. Jane has a blog, and she wrote this on her blog after she had received the news that she'd be moved from the hospital to the hospice to live out the remainder of her days. She writes this: "Joy will come in living out whatever days I have, choosing joy, spreading joy, and even helping others find joy. If I can find joy in the hospital, I can find it in a hospice or wherever God would place me. My heart is still okay, faring well, and trying to make the most of my family times. Not sure how quickly my cancer will progress over the next while, but we will continue to journey with joy. I keep hearing in the back of my thoughts, through deep suffering comes deep joy, deep suffering, deep joy. I feel this will be the very breath I breathe, deep suffering, deep joy. Still, I will combat this cancer. Let kingdom come. Let's give it a good fight, for we have God on our side. And what does Daryl Johnson always say?" Jane is always quoting Daryl Johnson. "We know the result. God wins. God wins." You can read Jane's full blog post at janejoyjourney.wordpress.com. It's a public blog. You can take a look if you'd like. Through Jane's faith, Jesus is already conquering death in a way. Through the joy that he's giving her, through the kingdom love that is evident in her friend's love for her, but also her love for others, through the outpouring of love, the expression of love in her recent marriage. And Jane's ultimate hope is found in her belief that Jesus conquers. He has already conquered death, and if he doesn't heal Jane right now, soon she will experience ultimate healing in her resurrection to new life. But she will not be raised up in her old grave clothes. She will be raised up in a new, glorious body, because she said it herself, "God wins, God wins, God wins." But hear this. Our life is not just about enduring hardship and sorrow until we get to heaven. In the chapter of John preceding our chapter today, Jesus says this: "The thief, that Satan, has come to steal and kill and destroy. But I have come so that you may have life and have it to the full." This full life isn't just for heaven. This full life is for now. Jane is experiencing joy and love now, but she has to look for it. Be a joy detective. Seek out those moments in the midst of her suffering where joy can be found, whether it's in moments with her new husband, whether it's witnessing the delight in her niece's nephew, or in a quiet moment of just being aware of God's love for her. Death, loss, pain, and sorrow. It's not if we will experience these things, it's when. We don't have a choice. But where we do have a choice is how we are going to react. We can run away from it. We can shut God out. We can try to go it alone. We may prevent ourselves from seeing God's glory. Or we can be like Jane, be like Jesus, be like Mary and Martha. We can walk through it. The messy, terrible awfulness, knowing that the only way through is through. But the sorrow can be tinged with hope that Jesus wins, tinged with the confidence that Jesus will resurrect a new dream, a new identity, a new character, and eventually new life. Tinged with the belief that all is not lost because Jesus wins. Would you please join me in prayer? Jesus, you said to Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die." And then you asked her, "Do you believe this?" You ask us the same thing. Do we believe this? Do we believe that you are the resurrection and the life? Do we believe that you are with us and are waiting? That you are weeping with us? Do we really believe that you are going to win? That you already have won? Jesus, help us in our unbelief. Give us hope that there is a grand plan that is greater than what we are experiencing now. In our pain and in our suffering, let us find a measure of comfort that you are weeping with us. And most of all, give us the assurance that you will resurrect something new, that you bring about new life. Jesus, that you win. Amen.